My name is Hank Carter, and I'm going to talk to you about a little bit of research we've been doing into making secure multi-party computation efficient on mobile devices through the use of outsourcing. So our smartphones have basically become a repository for our entire lives at this point. You know, my smartphone wakes me up in the morning. It tells me where I am. It tells me what's close by and how to get there. It keeps track of all my friends, my social connections, and my all-important communication with the advisor. It even keeps track of all my workouts. You know, it seems like every banking commercial or insurance company is telling you to do all your business directly from your mobile device. And while all these applications are really convenient, it comes at a cost that we're constantly exposing lots of private and sensitive information to these third-party application servers that may or may not be as secure or trustworthy as we would like for them to be. Now, in an ideal world, we could keep doing this type of computation, but keep our private inputs, you know, secure and private to ourselves. And secure multi-party computation will allow us to do that. Now, SMC is sort of a broad term which encompasses a lot of protocols that allow a group of mutually distrustful parties to jointly compute some result without revealing their inputs to one another. So to give you an illustrative example, the classic problem in SMC is the millionaire's problem. And the idea is that you have two millionaires, Alice and Bob, and they want to determine who is the wealthiest of the two millionaires. But they don't trust each other enough to tell the other millionaire exactly how much money they have. So what they're going to do is they're going to garble or encrypt or prepare their inputs in a certain way, run them through their SMC protocol, and what pops out at the end is either Alice is richer or Bob is richer, but no information beyond that as far as by how much or, you know, what their input values were. Now, needless to say, the operations that are associated with these kinds of protocols tend to be pretty heavyweight. So when we're looking at applying them to the mobile space, we have to consider that these devices are much more constrained in terms of processing, in terms of memory and bandwidth when compared to their desktop counterparts. Now, even if we did have mobile devices that were as powerful as desktop machines, we still have some very mobile-specific concerns like power consumption. You know, if my computation is going to run my battery down to 10%, it's not a very efficient use, you know, or computation. Additionally, we have to worry about service provider-imposed bandwidth caps. You know, if a single run of this protocol is going to use up half my bandwidth for the entire month, it's really not worth it to me. So why don't we have SMC on mobile devices right now? Well, a very dominant construction for this type of computation is the garbled circuit. And it has actually grown by leaps and bounds in terms of security and efficiency over the past couple of years. Unfortunately, it typically requires a significant amount of processing in memory, especially if you're trying to run large problems in the malicious security model. And it's basically just out of the scope of what mobile devices are capable of right now. Now, we have seen that some special purpose protocols for specific problems like set intersection or edit distance can be optimized to run on mobile devices. But then this brings up the problem of having to design a special purpose protocol for every single application, which just isn't practical in the long term. So the goal of our research in the ideal situation would be to have an efficient, you know, two-party SMC protocol that we could generalize to any function, that wouldn't be just specifically for one problem or another. And so to do this, rather than trying to run this computation on the device itself, we're looking at actually trying to move these difficult operations to the cloud. Now, at last year's USENIX Security, Kreuter et al. Presented a technique for performing this type of two-party garbled circuit computation very efficiently between two large servers. Now, this assumed that both parties were equally provisioned with computing resources, but what if one of those parties is a mobile device? Now we have this asymmetry, this imbalance in computing capability that requires some sort of help or outsourcing on the mobile side. So if we assume that our mobile device has some, you know, network connectivity and can communicate with a cloud service, then can we outsource these expensive computations to the cloud? Well, the simple answer is yes. If the phone just gives its private inputs to the cloud, then the cloud can run the computation in place of the phone. But unfortunately, this brings up the same problem just in a different context. How much can we trust our cloud provider? We want to do this type of computation without revealing our private inputs to anyone, including the third-party application server that we might be communicating with or the cloud provider. So just to give you a concrete picture of the setting that we're working in, we have a limited mobile device that I'm going to refer to as Alice for the rest of the talk. And it's trying to run a two-party garbled circuit computation with a web server and application server, which I'm going to call Bob. Now, Alice also has access to a cloud server, which is going to provide some assistance in the computation. And our goal is to run this, you know, secure two-party computation between our two parties. In our setting, we're assuming that Alice, our phone, is going to act as the evaluator and Bob's going to act as the generator. Now, for those of you who aren't too familiar with garbled circuit protocols, typically the way a two-party protocol breaks down is that one party is going to generate a garbled circuit, which is basically a binary logic circuit which computes some function but is obfuscated using some special cryptographic techniques. And then one party, after they've generated the circuit, is going to hand it over to the other party to evaluate. And the evaluating party can actually evaluate each of these gates individually without knowing what the input or output bits are at each level. Now, in terms of security, what we want is to preserve input privacy for both parties, not only from the other party doing the computation, but also from our third party, our cloud, which is helping us run this protocol. And in addition to just having the privacy requirement, which is standard to this type of computation, we also want to make sure that everyone behaves. So we want to ensure that not only are the two parties running the computation not behaving maliciously, we want to make sure that the cloud is also not trying to tamper with our computation or try to cut corners and sort of behave lazily in terms of running security checks while we execute the protocol. So how did we go about doing this? Well, we started off with the malicious secure technique developed at last year's Usenix Security. And we adapted the consistency checks that they use such that not only are we guaranteeing that both of the parties, Alice and Bob, are behaving, we can also guarantee that the cloud is behaving. So this involved adding in a few extra checks, modifying some things that they had already implemented. But basically, it's just ensuring that everyone's playing by the rules. Now, in addition to modifying all of the consistency checks, we also added in something we called the outsourced oblivious transfer, or the OOT protocol. And the idea with this construction is that it's going to allow our mobile device to deliver her private inputs to the cloud server for evaluation in a more efficient way than just running an OT and then delivering her garbled inputs. So let's take a look at the protocol. Our protocol is composed of five stages. The first stage is going to be the circuit construction and verifying the circuits are correct. The second stage is going to be our outsourced oblivious transfer, where the mobile device sends its inputs into the cloud. The third step is where the generating party, Bob, is going to send his garbled inputs into the cloud. The fourth step is actually the evaluation, where the cloud is going to evaluate obliviously this garbled circuit. And then finally, there's going to be a proof that the output of the circuit is genuine, it's valid, and then it's going to be released simultaneously to both parties. So we can get sort of a fair release by having this cloud act as an arbiter third party. All right, so let's take a look step by step at each one of these phases. The first phase, the circuit generation and check, is where Bob is going to generate a number of garbled circuits. And then the cloud and Alice are going to make sure that Bob didn't generate the circuit incorrectly or maliciously. We have to make sure that we're actually evaluating the function we want. So what to do this, Bob is going to generate several copies of the garbled circuit. He's going to hash each of these copies. And then he's going to send the hashed circuits, the outputs of those hashes, to Alice. And she's going to hold on to those for a bit. Now, Alice and Bob are going to determine a subset of these circuits that are going to be executed, and they're going to take the rest of the circuits, and they're going to open those up, and they're going to say, you know, check and make sure that they were constructed correctly. So once they've selected the subset that are going to be check circuits, Bob is going to reveal the random coins that he used to generate those circuits to the cloud. And the cloud is actually going to regenerate the check circuits, rehash them, and send those hash values to Alice. Now all Alice has to do is compare the hashes that were sent by Bob to the hashes that were sent by the cloud to make sure that everything was generated the same way and everything looks good. Now this saves us a lot because Alice actually doesn't have to generate lots and lots of check circuits like she would have to if we weren't outsourcing the computation. So this saves a pretty significant amount in terms of computation. Now the next step is our outsourced oblivious transfer. This is where Alice is actually going to deliver her private inputs in a garbled form to the cloud. Now we developed this based on a proxy oblivious transfer, which basically the idea was that rather than having the chooser in the oblivious transfer get the result back and then have to forward it onto the cloud, what we do is we have Alice, who's our chooser, who actually selects her garbled inputs from Bob, who then forwards the result directly to the cloud. So we can sort of cut out a middleman. Now, as you can see, we've got several arrows running between everyone here. And basically the idea is this. Alice and Bob are going to run a small set of base oblivious transfers. And what that's going to do is going to generate keying information. Now, Bob is going to encrypt all of the garbled input pairs for each input wire using this keying information, while Alice only has the keys to recover one of the two items in each pair based on our protocol. And so what Bob is going to do is he's going to forward all of these encrypted pairs to the cloud, and then Alice is going to send her small amount of keying information so that the cloud can recover the garbled inputs and we'll only be able to open one item from each pair, which is exactly the guarantee we want from oblivious transfer. Now, this is going to save us in terms of reducing the oblivious transfer operations required at the mobile device, and it's going to save on the bandwidth that's required between the mobile device and the cloud, because we're only sending a small amount of keying information rather than, you know, receiving encrypted garbled inputs and then forwarding them along. The third step is our input consistency check, which is basically going to determine if Bob's garbled inputs are consistent across each of the circuits that's being evaluated. Now, what we did here was we sort of modified the claw-free collections technique that was implemented last year by Kreuter et al. And what we have is Bob is going to send his garbled inputs to the cloud for evaluation. And then he's going to send a proof string, or basically evidence that these things were formed correctly, to the mobile device. And now after the cloud does some computation, which again is specified in the protocol in detail, on these inputs, the cloud's going to send the result of this computation to the mobile device, who's then going to compare that to the proof string. Again, much like in phase one, we can make sure that what the cloud has is actually consistent and matches the proof string that Bob gave us. Now, step four, again, is the primary evaluation. Now, as you can see, we have a very large arrow representing this step, because what's happening here is these garbled circuits, which can be megabytes or even in the large cases, gigabytes in size, are having to be sent from the generator to the evaluator to be evaluated. Now, so we've got very large circuits. We're executing several copies of these circuits. So the bandwidth is going to really explode during this step. And it would be very inefficient if we were trying to do this from the mobile device directly. Fortunately, because of outsourcing, we've been able to completely remove the mobile from this step. So again, it looks pretty much like a standard garbled circuit evaluation from one server to another. Now our last step, output and verification, basically what the cloud is going to do is it's going to prove, again, using similar techniques to Kreuter et al., it's going to prove that the output of the circuit is actually correct and was formed by one of the circuits that Bob generated. And then once it's proven that to both parties, it's going to release a decommitment key simultaneously so that both parties can recover their input at the same time. So now each party has the result of computation. The cloud hasn't learned anything about inputs or outputs, and we have successful completion of the protocol. Now, again, we're retaining all the security checks from last year's USENIX paper to make sure that we preserve security against all of the canonical attacks, malicious attacks on garbled circuits. Now, because we changed several of the techniques that they were using and because we've added in our own outsourced oblivious transfer, we did have to start from the bottom up and provide formal proofs of security for our protocol. But those are available in our technical report version if you have interest in actually looking at the nitty-gritty details. But ultimately, what we've shown is that we can have a malicious, secure, garbled circuit protocol that can be outsourced from the mobile device and provides significant performance improvements over just running this directly from the phone. Now, I should say there is a little bit of a caveat in terms of our security, and that is we can't allow either party to collude with the cloud. Now, if Alice or Bob is actually colluding with the cloud, this breaks a couple of the constructions that we've added in to our protocol. Now, in another work from CCS last year, Kamara et al. Noted this. In a standard garbled circuit execution, both parties are going to perform work that's linear with respect to the size of the circuit, be it generating the circuit or actually evaluating each layer of the circuit. So the goal of outsourcing is to come up with a garbled circuit protocol where one party, the mobile device, performs work that's sublinear with respect to the size of the circuit. Now, if we assume arbitrary collusion, then we could have Bob and the cloud colluding together, and what that implies is a general two-party garbled circuit protocol where one party is performing sublinear work with respect to the size of the circuit. And currently, we really only know how to do that with fully homomorphic encryption. So basically, this collusion problem sort of illustrates a larger, deeper problem that we hope to investigate more in future work. Now, while it seems like it might be a little bit of theoretical haggling, we think this represents a realistic scenario. In a lot of cases, you might have a cloud provider that is unwilling to share information with outside parties or collude in a malicious way, but might want to collect as much private information internally for the purpose of advertising or maybe even billing fraud. Now, to demonstrate the performance improvements over just running the garbled circuit protocol directly from the phone, we actually ported Kreuter et al.'s protocol onto a mobile device so we could run it directly with a server. We built our test bed of basically our servers were 12-core Dell servers with 32 gigs of RAM. They were connected on the back end with the 1 gigabit network connection to our Galaxy Nexus, or to each other. And we had a Galaxy Nexus phone, which we connected over an 802.11 wireless connection to both of our servers. So this is the setup we're running. The test applications we ran were the basic canonical apps that we see for garbled circuit protocols. We have the millionaire's problem, edit distance, set intersection of various input sizes. And then we ran a privacy-preserving AES 128-bit. Now, our performance results that we saw were very exciting. Now, here I'm showing the total runtime for edit distance, as well as breaking it down into the individual phases for edit distance of various different input sizes. Now, as you can see, for the very small input sizes, it's actually faster to run the garbled circuit protocol directly from the mobile device. But as the input size increases, the overhead and the cost of running these protocols directly on the device becomes pretty serious, while our outsourcing technique saves a lot when we get into the larger input sizes. Now, if you look at the broken down chart, note that the y-axis is in log scale. So while it looks like the top segment, which is the actual execution of the circuit, it doesn't look very large, it actually represents a very big chunk of the computation. So any way that we can save on this is a real benefit. Just to give you some hard numbers, for edit distance of 128 character strings, we saw a 98.9% speed up in the total execution time. Now, in addition to improvements in execution, we also saw a lot of improvements in the bandwidth required at the mobile device. Now, as you can see, again, we're looking at edit distance for increasing input sizes. As we increase the input size, the bandwidth required at the mobile device doesn't grow that fast. Whereas if you're trying to run this directly on the mobile device, you're having to pipeline larger circuits, larger inputs, and so the bandwidth used gets pretty big pretty fast. Just to point out a rule of thumb when we're talking in the wireless community, transmitting a bit of information takes roughly 100 times the power of computing on a bit of information. So in terms of power savings, if we can cut down on the bandwidth, this is really, really going to save for us. Again, just to highlight the magnitude that we're talking about here, for edit distance 128, we saw that our protocol used 3,400 times less bandwidth than actually running a garbled circuit protocol directly on the mobile device. Now, not only did this allow us to run garbled circuit protocols for larger input sizes, we can also run more copies of the circuit, which basically reduces the probability that any party could be cheating. So here we're looking at edit distance over certain numbers of circuits being evaluated. So we start with 2 and we go all the way up to 256. Now, as you can see, for the higher levels, the higher number of circuits, we couldn't even complete the computation when we were trying to do this directly on the mobile device. So just in terms of keeping track of hundreds of circuits, the bookkeeping required, just the memory explosion made it completely impossible to run directly from the mobile device. So what outsourcing has allowed us to do in this case is actually run this protocol with equivalent security guarantees to running it directly between two servers like we saw in previous desktop designed works. Now, in addition to this basic level of performance evaluation, we also did sort of a case study on larger circuits to see how this would perform when we really started pushing the size of the circuits. So we looked at the RSA-128 circuit that was used by Kreuter et al. And we also developed a privacy-preserving navigation application. And the idea is that Alice, our mobile device, is going to input her start and end locations. And Bob is going to input his information about the roadways, outages, dangerous paths, things like that. And so the circuit that runs is actually Dijkstra's shortest path. And it's going to compute in a privacy-preserving way the shortest path from Alice's start to finish, taking into consideration the blockages that Bob has input. And we looked at this over graphs of 20 nodes, 50 nodes, all the way up to 100 nodes. Now, we had access to a larger server for these experiments. We were using 64 cores and a terabyte of memory. Now, to sort of illustrate an application where you might actually use something like this, we thought, let's take a look at something that would be relevant here in Washington, D.C. So for our presidential inauguration application, we have the president going from the starting point to the inauguration. And let's say some intelligence agency that we won't name actually has lots of information about dangers, risks, blockages, things that have to be concerned with along the route to the inauguration. But they don't want to give up this information freely. So what we're going to do is we're actually going to run this private, privacy-preserving computation where the president inputs the starting point and ending point, and our intelligence agency puts in all the dangerous routes, and we can securely route around the dangers without either party revealing their private information. Now, of course, this has applications for anyone who might be traveling by motorcade, but it also has applications outside of just the political world. This could be used in terms of routing convoys, or if you're talking about commercial uses in industry, it could be used for shipping and logistics to make sure that shipments of sensitive or private company products make it in a fast and efficient way from point A to point B. Now, when we take a look at the results of this, the really cool thing about this part of our performance evaluation is that we're running some of the largest garbled circuits that have ever been publicly evaluated on any platform. And we're doing it from a mobile device, from an extremely limited computing machine. Just to give you an idea of how big these circuits were, for our 100-node Dijkstra circuit, in its unoptimized form, we're looking at over 2 billion gates. So these are pretty massive circuits. And when we look at evaluation times over 128 copies of the circuit, for 100 nodes, it's about 42 minutes. But we can bring that down to about 100 seconds when we look at 20 nodes. Now, granted, you might not want to sit and look at your smartphone for 42 minutes when you're doing computation, but this is a first step in really making this feasible and possible from mobile devices. It's something that we couldn't do at all before we took a look at outsourcing this type of computation. So in conclusion, our work has shown that a lot of the costly secure multi-party computation operations can be securely outsourced to the cloud. So without outsourcing, mobile devices were only capable of performing very simple problems, like the millionaire's problem that I mentioned at the beginning of the talk. But now that we've brought in outsourcing, all of my mapping applications, all of my social networking applications that I was using at the beginning of this talk, can be done in a privacy-preserving way where I don't have to give up my private inputs, but I can still get all of the convenience and usefulness of the application. Now, a lot of this is made possible by our development of the outsourced Oblivious Transfer, which saves a lot in terms of efficiency and bandwidth and computation at the mobile device. And our experimental results have really shown that a lot of performance gains, as much as 98% in terms of execution time, as much as 99% in terms of bandwidth at the mobile device, can be saved through the use of outsourcing this type of computation. So at this point, I will take the I'll be open to questions. Thank you very much.
Yep. Anyone have any questions? Come up to the microphone here. I'm not sure if we have another solution.
Hey, so the non-collusion assumption you had and the suggestion by Kamara that it would imply two-party sublinear protocol, that's only if Bob and the cloud collude, right? That impossibility result would be. So what's wrong, what's wrong with Alice and the cloud colluding? Because you can imagine that Alice pushes a VM image up into Amazon, and that would be a good way to do this, but you're saying that doesn't work in your system, so you have to have some third party running an SFE service or something.
Right, right. So there are some specific consistency checks, and the way that our protocol is running them, they break down if Alice and the cloud collude. And so we lose the security guarantees that Bob needs to make sure that everyone's behaving correctly.
So do you think that could be patched?
I think that with some work and with a little attention to detail that we could actually improve on that and strengthen some of the security guarantees that our protocol provides.
Great.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's thank the speaker again.